you're the custodian of your own health. I mean, you could have the worst situation, the worst boss, the worst spouse, the worst family, the worst environment, the worst setting, but you're still a custodian of your own heart.
Welcome to the Art of Success podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Buzinski, and I'm excited to be interviewing personalities from all different backgrounds on how they've learned and earned success. Our goal is that the stories would equip you to achieve success both personally and professionally. Please note that there may be explicit words or conversational topics in this podcast. So if you're underage or listening with a child, please be aware of this. Lastly, please note that all the views, beliefs, and opinions are not always a reflection of the hosts. Okay, let's jump in. Mark Varughese, welcome to The Art of Success.
Thank you, Daniel. It's an honor to be on your program.
Come on, man. You are one of a kind. I'm really excited for all of our listeners to tune in and hear what you have to say. When I first met you in KL, you're a sign and a wonder, man. You and your family, your wife, what you're doing. So thanks for taking time with us.
Well, you're very kind. I do wonder what's going on half the time. So yep, I am a wonder.
So look, you got to start off with one of these crazy stories, but give us a little bit of the upbringing, the family life. If you want to lead in with your wife and that story and how you got into what you're doing right now.
Sure. Well, I mean, the listeners could probably hear my accent sounds a bit Australian, but if they saw me, they'd realize I'm dark skinned. So I'm Indian origin, but born in Singapore, grew up in Malaysia, but Australian for the last 30 years. So I sort of feel comfortable everywhere, but belong nowhere. So too Aussie to be Asian, too Asian to be Aussie. So you know, probably grown up some challenges in the context of identity. What am I? Where do I fit? Which I think a lot of people wrestle with at various levels. For mine, it was an ethnic blend, which our world is getting more and more like that anyway. But then my wife is born in New Zealand, half Aussie, half Kiwi, which doesn't sound like a big clash, New Zealander. But she grew up in the Philippines, sounds like an American. Her father was a missionary there, and so she's pretty mixed as well. So I guess our mix produced two boys, and we've got two sons, Zeke and Caleb. They're the highlight of my life, and love them dearly. And yeah, so our story is pretty crazy. We met, and basically on our first coffee decided to get married, locked in the date. I went to bed that night thinking I've just had my first coffee, committed to marrying a woman, and we sort of, yeah, that's a whole other story for another podcast, I promise you. That'll be more shocking than startling, but it's real and it's happened. And 11 years later, amazingly, we're still together and it's all good.
That's great. That's, man. Oh my gosh. And that, to me though, that even that starting the podcast with that, that's kind of how you are, right? You're looking for green lights. You're looking, you're connected to a source and you are being led, right? And so talk a little bit about the movement that you're leading right now. It's a global church called Kingdom City, but tell us a little bit about the story, because you're not maybe the traditional, non-denominational or Catholic pastor or anything like that, right? It's you kind of stumbled into this. You were professional. Give us that whole background.
Yeah, totally. From my journey is a little unique in that I was a lawyer, worked in practice for 5 years. I grew up in a Christian home, so I had a faith, I guess, to some degree, but to me, the context in which I grew up was God was sort of sovereign and distant, and you know, it's more religion thing. And then when we moved to Australia, we went to a church, and the pastor talked about God like he knew him, and I thought it was a little weird. But at the end of the day, it triggered a journey in me, which it was, you can call it a quest to find significance or identity or purpose, or, you know, why am I on this planet? Is there more to life than just this and all of that? But I had no real desire to do what I'm doing. I just wanted to be a lawyer, make a lot of money, be successful, you know, hopefully have a family. And I was on track to do that. But then, you know, I think the encounters I had, the sense of God speaking to me, or whether you want to call it being led, or just that internal sense of there's got to be more than this, was really well and truly burning. And one thing led to another. And even though for a season I worked in a local church in Perth, Western Australia, I was probably not really that excited about it. And even though there was a lot of good, no, the pastor's a great friend, and you know, they were kind, they were good, but it was my journey, my naivety, my issues. And really where it led to is I was like, oh nah. And then I had what I call my burning bush, which, you know, for the listeners that might sound a little strange, but it's basically my awakening, my sense of, nah, okay, my life was meant for more than this. And long story short, I sold my house, bought a one-way ticket, went to Malaysia, which is, you know, is an Islamic country, and planted a church without having a visa. I wasn't married then. And so it was a real risk-taking adventure. And 12 years later, you know, we're in 8 different countries, 24,000 people. And yeah, it's quite miraculous. And we got seeds in Asia, Africa, Middle East, Europe, and in the West. So even culturally and ethnically, the stretch is real. But I guess to create culture within a movement that has first world, developing world, third world, and almost varying tribes and cultures has presented some challenges, but I love it. I mean, I feel like that was, it makes sense of my journey.
It's kind of like you. Well, you're like the melting pot, and so is Kingdom City then.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. My dysfunction was actually, I think, in some way divine preparation, because I related to multiple things, but I was looking for some sort of identity. But now I think that's what's helping me to do what I'm doing. And the risk side to it, you know, I'm not a maverick by nature. I'm not a huge risk taker in the sense of my personality. Like on holidays, I don't climb rocks. I don't climb ladders. In fact, on holidays, I barely climb out of bed, you know? So it's not like I'm the guy that jumps out of planes and then they go, Oh, yeah, that's who he is. So, you know, fair enough. That's what he's doing with his life, his work, his ministry, his business, his profession. That's not it at all. It's in fact, I'm quite conservative on multiple levels. But in the context of this, because I think there's a call, there's a cause, there's something bigger. It's about helping other people and empowering them. There is probably some underlying convictions and values that I've got that have allowed us to take pretty crazy risks. And, you know, not all of them have paid off. Don't get me wrong. Or not, you know, but the good has obviously far outweighed the bad in the 12 years we've been going.
Well, I mean, I would definitely say when you're in the people business, and I think anything devoted to community and faith is often usually a community piece dealing with people. It can get messy sometimes, right? But there can be a lot of beauty and joy and what I think people long for is community. So I love what you said, though. So first thing, every time we've talked, I feel it was like, yeah, we're 18,000, now we're 20,000, now we're 24. It's like every time it grows.
Right.
It's amazing, like what's happening and what's going to happen. And so 8 countries right now.
Yeah, well, actually, we've announced planting in Indonesia, so that's starting next year, but we're not in it. So we're probably in 7 countries, but we've announced our 8th. It's been a pretty busy couple of months, but if I'm really honest, I don't know when it's not been, lots of stuff going on. But I think it's always messy. You're right. In fact, if it's not messy, we're not doing anything, or if it's not messy, we're not dealing with people. So that's part of the course.
That is very true. Well, you know, one of the things that comes up for me is the whole idea of this podcast, The Art of Success, is to deal with the philosophy of lifestyle choices and business choices. And for you, every single organization and every single person has a philosophy for the decisions they make, right? And so tell us a little bit about the philosophy of Kingdom City and even what you've done and how that philosophy has influenced your growth and some of the principles that you live by personally and that you lead with. I'm a little curious on that as well.
I mean, in the context of us being a church, and even though it's starting to have some sort of global footprint, the vision statement essentially one line, but it best encapsulates the value undergirding the whole thing. And in a nutshell, it simply says connecting, equipping, and empowering people to bring the reality of God to their world. And intrinsic in that one simple line is both process and purpose. Process being connecting, equipping, and empowering. And there's a whole logic and wisdom behind that that I think is highly relational. You got to be relational. Then the whole idea of being teachable, learning and unlearning, and empowering, you know, because really our church or our goal with what God is doing and what we feel is being built here is not really about us. It's really about finding the potential in each person and unlocking that. And if you think about it, if we connected somebody, in a sense, played a role in equipping them or empowering them so that they could fulfill their purpose. We coined it in the term, bring the reality of God to their world, not just the theology or the theory, but, you know, bring kindness into harsh situations, bring light into darkness, bring peace into strife, and all of that. Whatever that looks like and whatever their world looks like, you know, for someone who's just got married, their spouse is their world. For someone who's got a mission and calling, their world is the world. Someone who's just got a business, that might be their world, their street, your whatever. Right. So right. Really, the end of it all, doesn't matter what your world is, our goal is to play some role in connecting you, equipping you, and empowering you so that you can bring the reality of God to your world. Not, it's not my job to do it, it's your job, because every person, fundamentally, we believe, has been created with purpose, been created with potential, and yeah. really, yet we will never fully realize that in isolation. I think in all of us is a natural bent for independence, because that's how we're wired. And yet I think there's so much of our destinies that are locked up in the people around us, even those we don't like. And so iron sharpening iron, you know, only happens when there's friction. It doesn't just happen when you plonk two pieces of iron on there. And so I find that if we can encourage people to stay within community, you'll find that the people around you will often unlock your next step and unlock things inside of you. It's not perfect. It's an inexact science. People are flawed. Having said all of that, we fundamentally believe, because there is greatness in each one, part of that greatness isn't just me on my track. It's me taking others with me. It's me using what is inside of me to help others. And so really a lot of what we do is centered around the underlying principle that God has a plan for every person, that there's great, whether they know him or not, there's greatness, there's potential, and there's promise that is also waiting to be unlocked. But in the context of community, I think it goes further. And that's where, if we can play some role, we don't have to own everything, we don't have to brand everything, but we will never really fully be able to measure the impact of our movement.
Dude, you know, that's the next level.
The numbers won't measure it, because if you said, okay, well, what are you doing to help the poor? I could tell you what our movement does in terms of programs and missional outreaches and blah, blah, blah. And
you don't really know, because you can't keep track of everything.
Right. I'll have to say, give me a year. Let me interview the, you know, 24,000 people or whatever there is at the time and go, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I've got a World Vision kit. Oh, what are you doing? Well, I volunteer at the local thing down the road. Oh, what are you doing? Well, I've given some money to charity. And I'd have to go and interview, and then I'd compile that list and go, here you go. Here's a room full of what we are doing. Because we is not the institution, it's not the constitution, it's not the board. It's the entirety of this global community, but we don't brand it, but we celebrate it, because at the end of the day, if we played a role in connecting, equipping, and empowering them so that they could do it, that's our vision fulfilled.
Your vision, here's to me though, the philosophy of the major part of what I feel the philosophy of what you're running, and what I think it is best encapsulated in is saying empowerment. Like, you can't do what you do and sleep well if you're not empowering people. And you can't grow at the rate that you're growing if you're not empowering people and trusting people. And it's remarkable to me, because you look at all great businesses and you look at all great families and communities, and that's that usually, if they're great, they have that at the center of what they're doing. Right. And equipping people, to your point, they might not be ready to be empowered for certain things, but you're taking people right where they're at, right what they want to do, with everything that they have in their hands at that moment. And you're saying, hey, what would you like to accomplish with your life? I mean, it's pretty remarkable. So talk to me a little bit about, go ahead.
I'm completely agreeing with what you're saying, because empowerment has to be the goal. The process is relationally based. So, you know, it's not some random applications. At the end of the day, we do things relationally. But then, you know, if you equip someone before you empower them, you probably set them up to fail. But at the same time, if you, you know, I think that the platform on which we do this is in that order, connection. And on the platform of connection, there's the learning, the training, the, you know, whatever that looks like. And then I guess with the ultimate goal of empowerment so that they can do it. So yeah, sorry, I interrupted your question.
No. It's killer. And I agree with that. And I feel like when I think also of Kingdom City, one of the things that is interesting is the diversity culturally, you know, managing movements in multiple countries, with, you know, one brand. Share some stories, I guess, because even my dad that did a lot of global travel, I mean, there's entire books on how to do business in Japan and in Indonesia, right? I mean, there's different cultural norms and traditions. So how do you, and then talk about where you have it in Dubai, all the different church locations as well.
Yeah, look, I think if I actually were to stop and think about it too much, I'd probably get a little scared, because do we know the entirety of the cultural context we go into? The honest answer is no. I mean, of course, we're not naive and we have some idea and, you know, we know what we know, and but we don't know what we don't know. But I guess it's a bit like, I mean, if you want to think corporately, like McDonald's goes into whatever country they're in, they would have some awareness of the context they're going into, but they also know their product. They know what they're doing and they know how they want it to look. Now, does it fly in every setting? I'm sure there's tweaks. I mean, I've been to McDonald's in multiple countries and, you know, they personalize and localize aspects of it to reach the people that they're in.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there is a fundamental awareness of what they are about. And I think that's the point. I think it's not that I'm an expert in cross-cultural work. I think with cross-cultural, the key is just humility of saying, look, there's a lot I don't know. And I'm not just going to walk in there as a Westerner or as a so-and-so, you know, from the first world and say, this is how it works. You've got to sort of hold on to some things tightly and hold on to other things loosely, and be conscious of the fact that if you're going in there with a heart to reach people, help people and serve people, that will come across in the flexibility, I guess, of what that looks like without compromising who you are or what you really started out to do.
That's strong. Talk to me about if you ran into a Kingdom City leader, right? And you had to give them advice. You had to tell them very shortly the most important lesson or thing that they had to do in their life and kind of thing. What would you say to them?
Look, I think from my perspective, in the context of what we do, I would want to know that leader has a very real, authentic relationship with God, obviously because of what we do, and it's real enough to affect their day-to-day. I'm never looking for perfection because none of us are perfect. I'm looking for authentic. I'm looking for honest. I'm looking for teachable. I'm looking for flexible. And so really, if people had the values of just being honestly teachable and hungry, I talk to our team often, didn't matter whether they're leading a campus, a city, or a small group, or a larger assortment of responsibilities and roles. I talk about health being the most vital thing, not size, not growth. If health is there, growth will happen. If growth is there, size will take care of itself. So I'm not preoccupied with the size or the numbers as much as people may or may not think, given the growth in 12 years. I'm actually really concerned that if I run into a leader, I want to make sure they're healthy. If they're healthy, growth will happen. I don't look at my son every day going, you haven't grown since last night. I don't recognize you. I just make sure he's healthy. And over a period of time, growth takes care and then size follows. So I think there's some leaders who they think size matters because that's what impresses people. So they do whatever they can to get size. And then they, to me, I'd rather something small that's healthy because I know it'll grow and size will take care of itself. And I think that's true of the individual. The person doesn't have to be perfect, have all their stuff together, but it has a sense of health internally. And again, we can break down what I think health looks like. For me, that's the key.
Well, it's clear. So talk to me about if you ran into someone on the street and maybe they're disenfranchised by the whole idea of faith or spirituality. And hey, I mean, you could be running into people because of the nations you're in. You could be running into people that were Muslim or were Jewish or were, I mean, every religion, right? I mean, you have Malays, you have Chinese Malays, and then you have all these backgrounds of all these different religions in every little corner of the world that you're in. What would you say if you ran into someone that had a religious background and they're just disenfranchised, they're bitter? What would you say to them?
I mean, I think one of the keys is to fundamentally believe in the value of each individual, regardless of their background or their upbringing or their religious status at any moment in time. Because there are people, because I believe fundamentally every human is created in God's image, the cascading consequence, I guess, of that is that every person deserves honor. Every person has value. And even if they're not doing good, even if they're disenfranchised, even if they, it's not my initial goal to go come and believe what I believe and come in alongside what I, but I think that's, I think the message that Jesus set out, which was to show love in a way that was not compromising who you are, but gives intrinsic value to every person, no matter whether they're going through a good time, a bad time, no matter what their background or faith. Now, what you find is, well, what I find is, that often leads to conversations that ultimately they can make decisions on what they want to do with their life. Because to me, the other thing is, not only did God create everyone in his own image with potential and promise, he gave them the greatest gift called free will, which can also be a weapon to destroy lives. But at the same time, if God honors that free will, so should I. So I have no barriers in wanting the best for someone, regardless of their situation or their status. I mean, we're all human. I don't get it right all the time. I mean, I still fight with my wife. We still have stuff. But I can be honest enough to say that if you look at every human through the lens of God created them in his image, they have value, they have gifts, they have talents. And even if they're going through a rough time, just encourage them along that. Most people will eventually, in the context of the relationship you have, want to know a bit more. And then, of course, the door's always open. I'm not nervous or scared about who I am, what I believe, and what I do. But I think that at times, if we don't start with the premise that everyone has value, even though they're on a different journey, we can often abort our ability to help lead and influence
them. That's good.
For their future.
100% love that. So, and I don't know if everyone listening that, you know, I asked two questions. If he runs into someone from Kingdom City, member, leader, whatever, if he runs into someone just on the streets, maybe they're disenfranchised with faith or whatever, what would he say to each of them? And I love your answers for both of them were very deep, right? I mean, it was more of a train of thought and, this tree diagram of thoughts to lead this person. So this is what I heard and this is what I saw, is I saw literally a tree diagram with, and then if this, then that, and if that, then this, and if no, then this or that, and ultimately bringing this person, whoever you're talking to, down to helping them realize that they could have greater purpose, greater joy, greater happiness, more fulfilling life. And ultimately, in that process, they'll have opportunities to make other decisions if they want to ask for forgiveness or forgive themselves or, that's really amazing. I mean, incredible.
I mean, I think people who process deeply at any level, when you start talking about things like purpose and potential and origin and why are we here, is there more to life than just me having a good time and then, that's it. Those things are all interconnected. And it's a question of where you want to stop. And often with most people, it's stuff that's happened in their life. They've gone through hurts. They've gone through issues. They went through something that disenfranchised them. They went through some. And the other thing about health, which is what I was referencing earlier, is you're the custodian of your own health. I mean, you could have the worst situation, the worst boss, the worst spouse, the worst family, the worst environment, the worst setting, but you're still a custodian of your own heart and you've got to make decisions. I think when I share my story, the imperfections of my own life and my ongoing imperfections give hope to the fact that, it's not about you becoming someone you're not. It's about you just becoming honest, vulnerable, and open. And if you're really processing honestly, I don't know how these questions don't eventually lead to something to do with eternity and purpose, because to me, those things seem like a natural follow-on. And, you go to a funeral and
it's major objectivism, right? In one way, like it's ultimately all the objectives lead to some objective. That's kind of what you're saying, though.
And it also depends. It's a case by case. There's no simple answer. Like if someone looks really open, vulnerable, and looking for hope, I'm not going to withhold what I believe is the absolute answer to them. But at the same time, there's a difference between that and me imposing something on someone who's on a journey. But even to the resistant and to the reluctant, I can still believe that there's purpose and promise in them and speak to that. And I think that is often what unlocks people, softens them, and just brings all those barriers down. And then I think those conversations for me, to me, personally, just speaking for myself, eternity is a major cornerstone that actually frames everything I do. Because I'm 40 now, 43. I've got 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years on this planet in total, maybe, whatever. And whatever God allows. And then I've got the rest of forever. Now, if I really don't answer that question honestly, I really have no reference to how to spend the rest of my days. So for me, that's a real thing. That's for me. And as a young kid, it was me. It wasn't about my faith necessarily, but faith to me was a huge, the answer to what it is. And so even like I said, for me, God was some ethereal divine concept that I could maybe, I could accept. But really, is when I realized how personal and profound and intimate this thing is, it just set a fire inside of me that set me on the course that I'm on. I understand that's just my story, but I share that with who wants to hear it. And you know, I think even if they don't buy into my journey, they can recognize, and most people will be aware, that they are looking for something more than just what's here, what's now. And really, they're asking the question, what am I on this planet for? Well, why am I here? How did I get here? And what's next?
Right. Man, that's super cool. Okay, so first thing, I really love that. It's not only respectful to the people that are listening that may be on a different journey, right? Because it's ultimately the inspiration and the power of purpose and the power of something that loves you and believes in you. It's like, I think that often people have become disenfranchised from a negative experience rather than something that's more divine, something that's more mystical. And I don't use those words lightly. I use those words because to me, that's what the experience has done with me and my connection and my faith with Jesus, right? I'm pretty obsessed with people can call it the historical version of Jesus, which he is written into history as one of the most famous and prominent, you know, person being talked about 2,000 years later. But I love what you're saying because it also allows people, again, the free will. People get to choose. You know, I always say, and I love this saying, is just saying like people get what they want.
Yeah. Right?
Like everybody gets what they want. And I know that can sound very harsh because we are all born into different situations in different countries. So I'm not talking about we get what we deserve. I didn't say that, right? I just said, you know, ultimately I've heard the stories of people being raised in the worst of worst situations, in the worst of worst nations, right? From a support or empowerment standpoint, that rose at the top, and the power of determination, right? And it seems that that's what Kingdom City is all about, is finding leaders and world changers. And a leader can be a leader of their family, a leader of their local business, a leader of their community, a leader of a small group, but empowering them to be the best version of themselves. It's like, that's strong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know any other way. And look, I understand in my journey, it's just like my journey. But in Kingdom City, it implies that there's a kingdom and a city, and the two need to collide. But that only makes sense if in the kingdom there is a king. The king is never the person or itself. In a world that's always talking about, you know, what I do, who I am, etc., I'm under no illusion that what has happened in the context of our journey is because that God has orchestrated so much of this on my behalf. And I'm not only unashamed of that. I guess for me, that is the absolute source and essence of my strength and journey. I mean, anything else, not to mention just because we're a church. It's not because we're a church, it's because who we are. If I was doing something else, if I was running a business, if I was running a charity of some description or some kind of, you know, non-church entity, it would not change my own connectivity with God in the context of who he is, what he means to me, and what that looks like. It just means the expression would look a little different. But I think that's very primary for me. So that's obviously who I am, and that's who our journey, that's what our journey's been. But I think everybody has to find that for themselves.
Right.
Otherwise, this thing becomes a bit disconnected and a bit divorced from who they are.
So I don't want to be too cerebral, but like, so just kind of more of a funny thought is, you know, you said you'll live to, you know, whatever, 90 years old, right? 70, 80, 90 years old. And you've got, you know, what does that mean? You got 30, 40, whatever, however many years, right? You know, what if you could at some point download your consciousness into some type of machine, some type of AI machine through some portal into your limbic cortex, into your brain, right? If that could happen, what does that Mark Varughese look like with unlimited superhuman thoughts and eternal ability? I mean, have you heard these thoughts of individuals beginning to try and figure out how to do this?
Wow. I mean, you're really intelligent. As in seriously, you're next level. But I think to answer the question, tell me if I didn't answer it, is genuinely, if there was this unlimited sense of access, what is to see everybody rise. I mean, if you can use that and utilize that to help the poor, the disenfranchised, the hurting, and the lost, I mean, what a great use of that unlimited resource, unlimited access. Oh, wow. I mean, to me, that'd be amazing. The frustration of life is to do the best with what you got, knowing that if you sort of had more, you could do a lot more. Now, we're all ideal in that way, but since you asked me as a hypothetical, my gosh, it would just mean we could accelerate that. Now, you'd need to come up with what that looks like, strategy, detail, you know, what does that mean? But I guess with cerebral infinity at my disposal, I don't think that'd be a problem.
So you know that we're already cyborgs. Have you ever heard that before?
Heard of what, sorry?
Have you ever heard that we're already cyborgs?
Look, I'm going to sound real dumb, but no, I haven't heard.
It's interesting, right? So, you know, we watch all these sci-fi movies, right? Do you enjoy watching, you know, a good sci-fi movie?
I'm not a massive movie person, and probably not. I watch Avengers, and I suppose Guardian of the Galaxy. That'd be pretty close.
Oh, that's sci-fi, right? So the whole idea is just these humans with supernatural, you know, abilities, superhuman ability.
I love superhero stuff. Sorry.
So the definition of a cyborg is a person whose physical abilities are extended beyond normal human limitations by mechanical elements built either into the body or as an extension of the body. And so having a smart device makes us cyborgs, right? Because it's an extended version of ourselves beyond our normal human limitations. That's kind of access into all the different realms of photos and our calendars. You know, I can go back 10 years in my calendar and actually see events that happened. I had this surgery then. And so it's an interesting thought. So it kind of leads into my question to you is like, how does technology, so when you were a kid, how does technology affect culture positively and negatively? I'm really interested on that thought for you because we're becoming so advanced so fast in a global world. How do you see that making a difference?
Well, firstly, I want to say I just learned something incredible, and thank you for that because that's brilliant, and I love that thought. But in terms of how that's affecting our lives, I think like anything, there's the pro and the con, there's the good and the bad. The good side is the obvious in the context of accessibility, information, what we learn, what we know, knowledge, and how that helps our world and technology and the advancements that come with it. I think that's brilliant. I think the downside is it can dilute connection if our internal sense of character and awareness and purpose does not grow at the same rate as our access. And what I mean by that is...
Well, yeah, define that.
Yeah, so if you have a young person who has access to a whole bunch of stuff that they're not emotionally or, you know, intrinsically aware of how that's a weapon. It's like giving a four-year-old a firearm. And is it good? Yeah, well, the firearm is a blessing, but only in the right hands and the right context. And so I think that's what technology is. If there are people who are dying because of addiction to computer games who've just not moved from their spot for 36 hours and getting, you know, I mean, again, I'm not saying anything that most people aren't aware of, that technology could have a downside. And there are movies along those lines as well. I can't remember the names off my heart, but I've seen a couple where the computer goes rogue or the technology goes AWOL. And you know, there's normally one good guy. It's normally Will Smith, but it's somebody that basically saves the day. And I think that is a real thing, fiction aside. We've got to be teaching people the fundamentals of humanity and human behavior so that we're not absorbed into information and knowledge that actually distorts who we are.
Yeah. Wow. That's good. I like that. Talk to me. So, and to me right now, like some of the process of what could happen in the future, right, is like we're these cyborgs right now where there's all biological humans, right? But at some point people can be called enhanced humans because they may be able to choose whether they want superhuman thoughts and whatnot, right? And then after that, it just becomes more advanced and more advanced and more advanced. And what I think, I mean, even just the little advancement, I mean, you think 10 years ago, the iPhone came out 10 years ago, right? How much has the world changed since I remember having the first MacBook? It was just like the weirdest, most, like how it's advanced is mind blowing. And so, I mean, I'm even more curious to dig a little bit deeper on that one with you is like,
I think it's scary, the rate of advancement, but, and again, don't quote me on the sources because I'll get this wrong, but essentially I did read somewhere that some of the most influential people in the world who are behind the advances in technology in terms of the inventors of all of this enforce for their own families and children technology-free zones. Kids have to play with sand and read paper and do stuff. These are some of the most cutting-edge guys who are, you know, selling us products that are changing our world, who are multi-millionaires, even billionaires, multi-billionaires, and they would, for their own family, be cognizant of the over-reliance on this stuff. So that's got to tell you something. And again, if that doesn't tell you that anything too much of anything is going to eventually distort stuff. And I think that's the point. Now, the rate of change,
that's killer.
Exactly what you said, the rate of change is so astronomical. My concern is that the rate of change in terms of our own sense of development does not keep up with
that's
that.
It.
That's when we could tip the boat.
Nailed it right there. If the rate of change accelerates so much so to this point of singularity and we can't keep up with maintaining our humanity in the process, it's very self-destructive.
It's going to tip. Absolutely. And you know, you can see that at an organizational level. You can see that when it comes to technology. I mean, if you've got an organization or a business or a movement and it's growing, but then you've got the guy who started with you, but they're not growing with the growth of the organization, they'll eventually be replaced or they'd have to be, you know, put into another role or something. So I say to our team all the time, if your personal growth doesn't keep up with the organizational growth, you're always welcome to be part of the family and the team, provided you're not precious where that role is. But if you keep up with that advancement, that growth, well, of course, whether you're leading at 1 or 100 or 1,000 or 100,000, that's part of the journey. And I think that's the same parallel with technology. What's happening with technology? That's why it's okay to say no. You know what? I don't want that app. I don't want to stay up at night and do. You know, for millennia, we've had things called sleep, peace, you know, stuff that apparently, is good for us. So, we just got to be conscious of making sure our personal growth and development is commensurate with anything else we take on.
Man, that is like, I've got so much I want to share with that. That is so good. I mean, even for all of those listening right now that maybe you're frustrated with the job that you work in, and ultimately, why be frustrated at the job you work in? You're the one that bought into it and said yes to it, right? And so you have to keep pacing yourself and, to me, in developing yourself. And to me, the first way and the fastest way to get out of this negativity of, oh, I work for the company, I work for the man, is realizing that you have the power and control to actually change your perspective and serve that company because they've paid your bills, right? Turn the negative into a positive. Don't just jump into an entrepreneurial journey and you're not ready for it. You know, it's like change isn't always the best thing. Sometimes it's changing the way we think about what we're going through that breaks us through, right? Rather than trying to change our situation.
For sure.
So we don't have a lot of time here. We're running up on time. I want to end with one last question here. You talked about green lights and red lights. I really love your perspective on this. Share with everyone kind of the way you operate in your decision-making with that.
Yeah, I think one of the, I guess, mantras or phrases that we throw around a fair bit around in our organization is live on green. And what that means, that's not celery juice or, you know, that's not a nutritious statement. That's a traffic light statement, meaning you got red, stop, amber, slow down, cautious, and greens, go. Now, it's a dangerous methodology if you drive as if every traffic light's green. But I think in terms of making decisions, it comes back to that idea that the starting point is we can do this. You know, we've been given access, we've been given permission. So we feel in the context of our journey, using God language again, because it's very real to us, that God's on this, God's for us, and he's already said to do this. So permission has been granted. The question is now, it's a default setting question. So in other words, some people are like, they live on red, and before they make any decision, they need to see 10 signs. I'm like, I assume the light's green and I need to see some red to not do it. And that could sound irresponsible, but it really comes back to a perspective. It's a starting point. And I think from my point of view, it's also one of the signs of maturity when I see someone being able to live on green and not cause car wrecks. For example, if I said to someone, can you get me a bottle of Coke from the deli? I've given the instruction. With that comes the empowerment, the access, you know, you've got my keys, you go in the car, whatever. But if I had to say, okay, now pull the chair back, now get up, now left foot, now right foot, now left foot, now turn left, now open the door, walk through the door. Now, I'm being facetious, but the point being, some of us wait for every step to be so articulated and clear, and yet I would see as a sign of maturity someone who doesn't need my every second guidance. So for me, I even look at that even with God, and I know there's some Christians who might wrestle with this idea, but I'm like, if God said go, I'm going. Now, do I believe that he could introduce an orange or a red? For sure. This would be irresponsible advice if you've never felt the check or the caution or the sense of awareness of soberness, I guess, of, you know. So it's not this insatiable greed. It's not some appetite just to do whatever at the expense of whatever. There are things I've said no to, things I've said, oh, I don't feel right, don't feel good. And I think that's vital. If you've never felt that, throw out everything I've just said. But if you have felt that, I just know a lot of people would see a lot more done in their life if they took some risks and just went there and went to some spaces and places knowing that the light is green operating as if that's supposed to be. Now, if it runs out or we run into a roadblock, sure. But it's not some report card on my identity and I'm not a failure. It's just the idea that I think in the last 12 years of our journey, we wouldn't have gone where we've gone and done what we've done if I treated every light as red, needing 1,000 green signs, as opposed to treating every light as green. But then at the same time, you know, we've been course corrected and aligned because we're not, we're not trying to be responsible with that.
That's right, man. That's killer. That is like, you've got a green light. If you're listening right now, I would say statistically that people are much more likely to find red lights than green lights, right? And often it's unearthing your potential. It's they're stretching, there's learning, there's, you have to take on humility. I think that if anyone notices that there's more green lights than red lights, I think that we would just live our lives different. And I think that we would actually consciously treat people differently as well, realizing that the biggest green light that we have is working on ourselves and working on being a light to every person that we connect with, man, right? Being a source of energy and hope of and inspiration. So, Mark, thanks for being on the show. Like, killer, man. Super enjoyed the conversation.
It's been an honor. You've taught me a lot of stuff I didn't know, and I really appreciate the time, Daniel. But I hope I hope it's landed well with the listeners. And I look forward to our next catch-up.
Well, if you're listening right now, you just listened to Mark Varughese. He's traveling the world, making a difference, and defining the power of personal and professional success through empowering others and leading this global movement called Kingdom City. If you enjoyed it, send it out to your social media. Maybe send it to a friend or a family member. But I'm looking forward to getting your feedback on the show, and we'll see you next week. I hope you're more successful in life because of this episode from The Art of Success. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe for the future updates on other episodes released. Also, if you've enjoyed what you heard today, share The Art of Success with a friend, colleague, or family member. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.